Hey everybody, welcome to the EV Cafe Takeaway, a podcast focused on the electric and zero emission future that we all hope for. I'm Paul Kirby and I'm going to be joined by various members of the team. In fact, I'm really fortunate today because I've got two and we're all doing it together. But Sarah and I will be talking to John Curtis. So really helping you get to know the EV Cafe team. So without further ado, let's welcome John. John, welcome.
Thank you. This is weird, being interviewed by two of my best friends on the EV Cafe that I belong to is very odd.
Well, it's weird now. You wait. You see what we've got to do.
You're already going down a dark hole.
Oh, don't mention dark
yes,
holes.
Yes, anyway, we better rescue this from the abyss before we go too deep. John, listen, you know, we have known you for a good number of years now, but I guess the joy of today is to help introduce the real John Curtis to the wider world. And so we're privileged to know you, but help us understand John Curtis and how you got here. Give us a snapshot.
I'm not sure of where I am, mate, to be really honest. I think it's a really hard question because I'm the perpetual mess up. I'm the person who never is good enough, has never achieved anything, hasn't realised my potential, and I'm certainly not where I think I can be. So I'm actually quite a complex person. I appear quite confident and self-assured, but actually I'm just a bag of
so we didn't quite get there. Know this. We are aware of this, and we have those conversations and we have those moments. And one of the beautiful things about the EV Cafe is, of course, we are comfortable enough with each other to be able to have those conversations. But John, where did that begin? How did you end up this wonderful box of tricks that we know?
I honestly don't know. I've been through quite a lot of therapy. So I've suffered from depression, which was diagnosed when I was 13. Now I'm 57, so I've lived with it for 44 years. I've been on medication for the last 22 years. And I had a breakdown at school. So at the age of 13, I was doing 10 O-levels as they were then. I was a bright pixie and doing well. And I felt the weight of expectation was too much for me to bear. And that I'd let my mum and dad down. My dad was a copper. My mum worked in a shop. And so they had, you know, ordinary jobs. They were loving parents, without question, two brothers. And so it was a constant battle to be what they wanted me to be. They thought I was the bright one out of the three of us. And so there was all that weight of expectation, deliver for us, be the bright spark, read books, learn lots. And at the age of 13, I collapsed. I literally, mentally, I just couldn't cope. And this was in the days when nobody had depression. If you had depression, you went into a home. It was that bad. And school gave me 3 months off and they said, just go away and get well. And so I started on a journey to discover who I really am. And I didn't know. And as part of that, I had counseling and support and therapy. And I got to a point where somebody said to me once, don't tell me your job. Don't tell me anything about the thing that you do for a living. Who's John Curtis? And I burst into tears. And I said, I don't know. I was a dad, two kids at that time. I was completely clueless as to who I really was. And so from that point, and that was the age of 37, from that point on, the last 20, 22 years, I've worked hard to discover who I am, but not the person my mum wanted me to be or my dad wanted me to be or people expect me to be, but what I feel inside.
Yeah, I really agree with that. So much of who we are stems from what we stand for and what we believe in. And then that leads on to the jobs we have and the people that we meet and the friends that we create within those worlds. And I know who John Curtis is because John Curtis is the guy who I met really a long time ago now when you were hosting a big prestigious event for us because we've been awarded the money in Bristol and the West of England Combined Authority. And you brought the roadshow with you, the Greenfleet Roadshow. And I am quoted in saying, is that John Curtis? And then I got to be on the panel with you and you hosted the event so eloquently and so beautifully. And you pulled the whole room together with your experience, your presence, the way you communicate to everybody in the room in one go. That's who you are. You're an expert communicator. You're a highly intelligent achiever who has a law degree, who has helped roll out infrastructure across Scotland, who we are now so proud to have you as our full-time operations director for the EV Cafe. And we have seen the proof where we've accelerated our numbers, we've reached out to even wider communities. So we're really now fulfilling our mission because of you. But I don't think if we'd have asked you this 10 years ago, you in your wildest dreams would think that this would be your full-time job.
No. When I was a kid, I wanted to be prime minister. So I was hugely interested in politics. I was interested in law because my dad was a policeman. And I realized that I probably would never be prime minister. That just doesn't happen. But I thought I could be a solicitor. I thought I could be a barrister. And so because I love communicating, I love asking questions, I like getting information from people, using my brain to make it make sense. And so that was my driving goal. And my dad said to me, I'm not paying for you to go to university. This was at the age of 17. I said, I'm not paying for you to go to university to study law because lawyers put me in the witness box and they make me out to be a liar. You're better than that. Go and get a proper job. And it was when I was 37 and I had another breakdown. It was a crisis of confidence. And who really am I? And I thought, I always wanted to do law because I want to understand how people, society works together. And when things don't work out, what are the mechanisms we can use to find clarity, to find a way forward? And law was the way that I chose to do that. And so I went to university at Edinburgh and studied my degree. And that was the start of me repairing the things that had happened to me through my life, which were nobody's fault but my own. I chose not to study law to show my dad respect. That was my choice. It wasn't his command that I didn't study law. It was how I reacted to that was the problem. And it caused me huge pain. And I carried that around for 20 years, blaming my dad that it was his fault that I didn't study law. And what I've learned over the years is that actually that was my decision because I could have fought. I could have said, no, Dad, I'm doing it, whether you pay for it or not. But I didn't. And throughout all my life, I didn't make it to be prime minister. I didn't make it to be a barrister. I didn't. And I keep saying I didn't. And actually, Sarah, since I started work with the EV Cafe, and especially in the last 6 months, what I've discovered is that I can, I do, and I'm going to continue to do because I'm in the right environment. You people and the people that we have in our community make me feel valued in a way that I don't value myself. And that gets me
through
every day.
That's what we do at the EV Cafe. We bring together a large community of people to accelerate the transition towards electric vehicles. That's our mission. That's our strapline. And actually, we are and we will and we continue to do. But I think what's interesting in that is the word evolution. So I strongly believe that every human has sort of cycles, 10-year cycles, so that's sort of 0 to 10, 10 to 20, 20 to 30, and so on. It doesn't have to be exactly on the double digit, but at what point do we evolve? And I think that's what we do so beautifully as a group, is not just us as individual people. We've all had life-changing moments in the years that we've known each other, and yet there's always that central focus that holds us all together, that linchpin focus, which I always say is friends first, colleagues second. And I do believe that's absolutely our secret sauce on the EV Cafe. The people that work with us, they've got you doing seamless logistics for everyone so that when they turn up at the event, we look polished, even if we probably don't do it all of the time. But you are the driving force behind that. And I think anybody watching this will be really heartened to hear that the man they see and the way you are perceived isn't false. That's not you acting. That is who you are at all times. But we can all take away from it our ethos on EV Cafe about mental health. We share, we're vulnerable. We do want people to understand that, yes, we have bravado. Yes, we are experts in our field. We're continuing to gather knowledge. But without that belief that you are who you are on that day, that's all you need. So you saying that you've set these targets, I mean, flipping it, prime minister and a barrister. I think I wanted to be a rock climbing geologist when I was 10. You know, it's about where you set your parameters. And sometimes ambition can be a downfall, I think. And I think it's really important that people appreciate where they're going, what they've got and who they're there with.
What I've spent the last probably 10 years of my life doing is telling other people's stories.
Yeah.
I've realized that actually there's a lot more that you can learn about other people if you shut your mouth and ask good questions. And that's kind of what I do when I host things and when we work on the webinars and so on. It's to get other people's stories out. Other people aren't great at communicating, but with the right question, a little bit of support, a little bit of understanding, you get fantastic performances from people. So me just doing what I do helps other people tell their story. My story's pretty dull, really.
Okay, by comparison. I'm going to interrupt. So self-deprecation is a comedy trait often, but when we look at our lives, and John, as we look at our life, your life in particular, we are in a position to judge pretty much like nobody else can, because we've got the joy of knowing you at the age that you've got to, having done all of the things that you've done and been on the journey that you've done. And we can look back and as a collective, both just on this call now, but also as the wider audience, and look at your life as anything but dull. And actually what you do is you bring those wonderful questions, and it's only because you have got comfortable with this vulnerability and you've got at home with yourself that you're able then to help other people be at home with themselves and to celebrate their story. You tell your story very well, and you tell other people's story very well too. And it sort of leads me to think, John, you know, what have been those highlights for you? As you look back, you know, the bit between 17 and 37, it seems like a bit of a wilderness period. Maybe 37 onwards, have there been highlights? What have been celebrations in the life of John Curtis?
Let's take the wilderness years. So I worked in sales and marketing predominantly, and ended up as head of channel marketing for the post office. A period of my life when people talk to me, they say, did you see that film? Did you see Forrest Gump? And I say, no. Did you see Dirty Dancing? No. Did you see? And I'm like, I didn't see any films in the 80s and 90s. What were you doing? And I say, I don't know. I have no idea. Raising kids, living life, playing rugby, I don't know. And it is as though I've almost switched my head off and said, those 20 years didn't exist. My life started at 37 when I did my counselling, when I discovered who I wasn't and wanted to find out who I was. And from that point on, I've achieved I've had some real experiences. You know, I did my law degree whilst running the Court of Session for Scotland in the Supreme Courts, and became a motoring journalist. I've developed infrastructure and policy and worked for the government and all that stuff, which is remarkable when somebody else says it. But when I say it, it's just failure after failure. I didn't achieve the level I wanted. I wanted to become a director. I wanted to get my, you know, a CBE when I left the civil service. I didn't do that. No matter what victory I achieve, it's never good enough. And that comes back to my dad. My dad, and through counselling, I discovered this. My dad had this view that he had to keep my feet on the ground. So I was a sports person. I played a lot of football, a lot of rugby when I was a lad. And I was never allowed to celebrate my wins, because you're only as good as your last game. Go and work hard, be better. And that's really stuck with me. So everything is a failure, no matter how good. You know, I looked at our social media figures this month, and they weren't as good as last month by that much. And I failed. You know, it's not just a bit of, oh, that's almost the same as last month. We're getting to a plateau now, and that's good. That's where we should be. It's didn't hit last month's, darn, we haven't got any growth. Okay, what can I do different? What can I do better? And that development thing is really important to me. I have to be better at everything I do. I don't have to beat anybody other than myself. I'm not trying to be better than you, Paul. I'm not trying to be better than Sarah, because that will never happen. We're all unique. But I can be better than me.
Yeah, that's the most dangerous place to be. I actually really relate to that. And people say, you're so competitive. And I say, actually, no, I'm the person in a bike race that holds the door, holds the gate open for the next rider, just because I'm like, well, you know, I think I'm doing all right. But if I get, I used to be at school the same as you, I completely relate to your story, taking way too many exams, doubled up on a few of the GCSEs, all A stars and A's, of course, head girl, prefect, bus prefect, whatever. It was never enough. It was never enough. And all I wanted was exactly that, for my parents to go, I'm really proud of you. That's brilliant. And actually, I'm very grateful now in my older years that that actually wasn't the case, because I've managed to cultivate a way of being proud of myself without having to wait for somebody to tell me. But that's only just happened now. I heard yesterday that Vera Wang, the designer, didn't design her first dress until she was 41 years old. So again, yeah. Evolution point is, we're so good at looking back and seeing what we failed at, and so bad at looking back and seeing what we have achieved. I found an award application for the EV Cafe right from our first year in 2020, and we went for an IT Innovation Award, and we were proud of having 500 followers on LinkedIn. And that's your drive. That's what you've done, is helped us get to that position as a team.
I don't think I have achieved yet the thing that I can achieve. And this is why the EV Cafe is so special to me. We are breaking new ground. We worked with some really lovely people yesterday from the motorway group. Paul and I did some training for them. And what we were discovering was new ways of positioning their proposition, which will give them a competitive edge. That really got me excited. I left there and was like, well, those people are great, their systems are great, and we can help them to develop a better tomorrow, which will give people better jobs, better self-fulfillment, excuse me, all the things that perhaps I feel that I missed out on. That's a buzz, but where can it go? What could we achieve if we all held hands and ran in the same direction? This is brilliant, providing that we're not running off a cliff. And working with experts like you guys, I know that we're not heading towards a cliff. We're heading towards a really.
And John, what is it that's got you? Because, you know, I think we've got a really good picture of. And thank you so much for your vulnerability through that conversation, because I think it's a real secret sauce of the EV Cafe, right? Is that willingness to be open about our lives and to talk about the challenges and counselling and breakdowns and the, you know, the depression that. You're doing a massive job and a wonderful job of managing and, you know, really bringing something really amazing to the party. What is the energy? What does the engine room of John Curtis look like today? What is it that gets you out of bed each morning? And I know working with a wonderful team like us, of course, but what else?
It is that. It's people. So, I know that I'm getting better every day, and I'm getting better every day mentally, physically, and professionally, because I work with people who push me. Sometimes you push me out of my comfort zone. Sometimes you push me to the point of anger. But yeah. And, you know, I'm a highly emotional human being, so I laugh a lot. I cry a bit. As long as the proportions stay that way, I'm all right. I get angry sometimes, but most of the time I'm the easygoing, gentle giant who, yeah, you know, whatever. I'm a really complex mix, as we all are. What gets me out of bed in the morning is knowing that I'm doing something that seems to add value to people's lives, whether that be the little group of people that's in the EV Cafe, the wider community, or new people I meet who have a fire alarm going off. Which is interesting. Damn, I'm hot.
It's like QI, you must have sent the trigger word. Oh,
dear.
Well, I know something that gets you very, very angry, which is why I wondered about whether being with your ambition, sticking with your ambition about being prime minister, the only time I ever see you very truly angry, apart from when we annoy you, which we always do, is government, when you feel government has let people down. I read it. I've worked for local authorities as long as you have, and I feel empathy and sympathy and frustration, but it never makes me fundamentally angry, and you have that passion in you. So what makes you so cross about government?
Self-interest. They don't care about you. They don't care about me. They care about themselves. Having studied law, I know that laws are enacted to deal with a mischief in society. That's essentially what a law does. And politicians seem to bend law to deal with mischief, to make sure that they can get around it and not get caught up in it. And they are not honourable people in some circumstances. Some are very honourable, working incredibly hard, but they tend not to be the ones that climb the greasy pole and end up becoming responsible for very important things. The COVID situation frustrates me massively, how we can spend £13 billion on PPE that wasn't fit for purpose. How is that possible? And how can you not get angry about that when we've got children eating out of dustbins, when we've got nurses going to food banks? How can you not care that we have people who are taking the piss out of you, out of me, by claiming massive allowances for turning up for 2 minutes in the chamber? How can we not be frustrated that we are paying for their lifestyles, for them to become multimillionaires, and yet we have people who are out on strike today who can't get a living wage? That is not right. My grandfather was a Labour councillor. And maybe this is something to do with it. There's a deep socialist inside me. I'm a Tory socialist. You know, I'm a posh boy in that I do enjoy the finer things in life. I'm very, very fortunate. But deep down, I know that there's an inequity. There's a poverty in this country, which is unacceptable. Fundamentally unacceptable, and we all do very little about it. We do our little bits, you know. I'll give some money to charity, I'll stop and talk to somebody who's sleeping in a doorway, but really, I'm not doing all I could to solve those issues, and politicians are doing even less. And if you turn up at a food bank with a camera, you are scum, and that has to stop. You know, we've got politicians who use people's poverty as a media support, a crutch. Don't take photographs. Mm. Go and solve the problem. Go and pay people a decent wage. And, create and John, economic that, I mean, that's, growth.
It's sort of, you've got a wand. It's in your hand. What would you wave it to achieve? within this context? You know, what one thing? Because, I mean, you know, it's clear that you're really passionate about that, and I really get that. What is it that you would like to be able to do?
I wish I could create another system of politics that doesn't use politicians. I wish that people could be better represented so that we shared the wealth for the common good. And I don't mean wealth as in money. I mean that we all feel loved, we all feel supported. It is a bit of that sort of socialist ideal that where we look after the weakest in our society, and that we put our effort into doing that. What we do is we spend our lives seeing how we can all become wealthier rather than more enriched. And I think that's the difference. We need to enrich people's lives, which is what the EV Cafe tries to do. With the motorway group yesterday, we tried to enrich their lives with information which will allow them to make more jobs, good jobs, creating more wealth, but a fundamental enrichment of human beings. And that's what I wish we could do. So stop focusing on money, start focusing on enrichment.
Yeah, we get asked that quite a lot. What's the point of the EV Cafe? Why are you bothering? Isn't it a lot of work? You do it weekends, evenings, in and around your day job, on top of the day job for all of us. So I don't know what you say. I tend to say something along those lines. It's we are using our knowledge, which is our wealth. So we're trying to give over and back as much as we can, because each one of us, all five of us, feel compelled to push harder and faster. You've got people. Each one of us has joined together to do this because that's our mission. What do you say when people ask you, what's the point of the EV Cafe?
My mum died of lung cancer at 69. My mum smoked from the age of 14. My mum committed suicide over 55 years. That was her choice. She knew from the minute I was conceived to the minute she died, she was smoking quite happily. She made a choice. She paid the price. We talk about a young girl called Ella on our training course, a young girl who at the age of 8 years old died of an asthma attack because of poor air quality. She didn't make the choice to live in Catford. She didn't make the choice to breathe in particulate matter. She didn't make the choice to die. That is what drives me to do what I do. It's to reduce the harm that is caused to people who have no choice. They live where they live. They live by busy roads. They live with 44-ton trucks going past their door. And we can do it better. We can do it cleaner, and we can save people from themselves, which is ultimately what law does. Law is there to save people from themselves. And if you go back to philosophical questions, ultimately there's a philosophy that suggests that we would beat the living daylights out of each other and it would be the survival of the fittest. Well, that's not acceptable. We live in a cultured society where we should protect those who need it most. And Ella was one of those who needed it most. My mum made a choice which is hers, and I respect that. I miss her terribly, but I respect her choice and living her life her way. Others don't get that choice. They have transport poverty. They have poor air quality. They need better from us, and we are the lucky few who have the opportunity to make that change happen.
John, it's such a powerful statement. Because the underdog is someone always close to my heart. You know, the people that don't have a voice or can't say something or are being oppressed for some particular reason kind of makes me want to say, you know, we said about government, but you're a lawyer. You're at heart. Because law and everything that you've talked about, this sense of justice, a sense of right and wrong, is there a law somewhere in the back of your mind that you would love to bring to pass, that you'd love to create?
Great question.
That would make a difference.
I don't think law gives people the motivation to do the right thing. It can do, but I think if you want to lose weight, you need to go on a diet or exercise more. You have to have the internal compass, the moral compass that says, I'm fed up of being how I am. I want to do something about it. No law that says I can't be 24 stone. I'm not 24 stone, by the way. But no law that says I can't be 24 stone is going to stop me eating cream cakes. Banning cream cakes will stop me eating cream cakes, fair enough, but I'll find another sugary substitute. And I'll keep doing that. I'll find ways round it. Law is like that. People find ways round. Politicians find ways round. But when your moral compass is set, that you will do something different. I'll give you an example. I used to drink. I used to drink a bottle of wine quite regularly, 2-3 nights a week. And it started to get out of control. And I started with my medication and alcohol. I started to be a human being I didn't like. And I ran the risk of losing my children and losing my wife because I was unbearable. And that was a turning point. And my moral compass, because I realized I was going to lose them all, overnight took me from drinking 3, 4, maybe 5 bottles of wine a week to nothing. And 9 years ago, almost to the day, I committed to never drink another drink, and I haven't, not a drop, because my moral compass said so. The law was there to put me inside if I continued my behavior. But I didn't, because the thing that will stimulate me to change is that inner voice that says you're not doing the best for yourself. And I can't be who I am if it's not for those people that I care about, my family, my friends. So to be the best me I can be, I literally overnight just said, that's it, done. And I can be around a bottle of drink. There are bottles of, I shall get some. There are bottles of wine here. They're not mine. They're my wife. And I don't care. It doesn't bother me. I can be around people who socially drink. Happy days. You crack on. But my moral compass says no thanks.
I can't decide if those bottles of wine are very small or if you're actually really big.
Huge.
Far away.
Oh, dear. There you go.
Which is adorable. But you make a very valid point. All behaviour change starts with a trigger. For you, that was realising that you weren't being the father, husband, employee that you wanted to be. For clean air and going EV and everything in between, that, for lots of people, is the arguments. For some, it's the global issue. But we know from our industry that, a bit like politics, really, we believe that we're helping people. We believe we're doing the right thing. I meet trolls on a daily basis who do not think that. And they think that I'm awful for supporting electric vehicles and I'm trying to ruin their lives. But it's hard to maintain that moral compass and that sort of straight and narrow, which you clearly have done in 9 years of not drinking. I can't even give up pork scratchings. So I really salute you.
You're a classy chick.
I'm so classy. I know you were talking about wine. I was thinking, how many pints are you allowed in a week?
Pork, I don't know the answer. I have to stand with you on that one, Sarah. Don't ever give them up. Well, John, it's been a real joy to put a little bit of extra meat on the bone of who John Curtis is. A privilege that we kind of knew about, and hopefully those of you that have been listening have learned a little bit more about what motivates John Curtis. You know that you don't ever have to buy him a drink. That's all very good. Don't ever be a politician around him. He might get cross with you. And I think that moral driver of wanting to make that difference is the thing that will sort of, I'll take away from today. Sarah, what would you take away from learning a little bit more about John today?
Well, the only missing facet from John, which we know about that others may not yet know, is whilst you are very self-critical and do try to find and strive and move towards the next big thing, you're not like that with us. You are this wonderful, nurturing, encouraging figure within our group. And I think all of us have days which are hard, and we reach to you, we reach to each other, but what you do so beautifully is you find a way to reframe the issue. So I could come to you with a problem and you would so brilliantly say why it's a problem for now, it won't be a problem for tomorrow. And I think if only we could encourage you to apply that same love and self-care to yourself, then you'll continue to strive and grow as you have been evolving. So for me, my takeaway is just, I hope everyone sees what we see, and long may it continue.
Thank you. I see what you see. And I think I used to see lots of things as problems, and now I see them as development, genuinely development opportunities for me to be better. And you have all helped me achieve that, as have the wider community. I could name so many people who have been part of my journey and helped me recover from self-inflicted mental injury, you know. I couldn't do it without any of you, so thank you for this opportunity. When we started, Paul said, we might do 20 minutes, we're going to aim for half an hour, and I was thinking, there's no way I can talk about myself for half an hour. I could talk about other people all day, but me, not a chance. Here we are at 38 minutes. I do apologize for wasting
it's
your
not
life.
A moment.
You can pay us later. It's been an utter bore. Painful.
Well, I know all that will be listening will be screaming at the either the screen or the earphones to say, what a lot of rubbish. It's been a delight. So, John Curtis, EV Cafe. So that's it, everybody. Thanks ever so much for listening to the EV Cafe Takeaway podcast. Please do head over onto YouTube or LinkedIn, Instagram and Twitter. We're there for your enjoyment any time. But yes, thanks everybody for listening and join us next time.